Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. The full House is expected to take up the debt deal designed to avert a government default. Republican Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz has asked how he'll vote.
I'm not close to a yes vote. I didn't even vote for the Limit Safe Grow bill, so probably not.
The House expected to take up that vote tomorrow. More from CBS's Stephen Portnoy.
The debt deal has been maligned by progressives on the left and conservatives on the right. But Biden Budget Director Shalanda Young calls it a reasonable agreement.
This is what happens in divided government. They get to have an opinion and we get to have an opinion.
Young says Mr. Biden and his aides are reaching out to skeptical Democrats to teach them about the proposal.
What you don't do is call and tell them what to do. You educate.
Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, The White House.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis hits the presidential campaign trail with a first stop in Clive, Iowa, pitching himself as a strong Republican challenger to former President Trump.
American decline is not inevitable. It is a choice. And we must choose a new direction for our country. We must choose a path that will lead to a revival of American greatness.
DeSantis will also stop in New Hampshire and South Carolina this week. People may still be trapped underneath the wreckage of a partially collapsed apartment building in Davenport, Iowa, according to the mayor and police chief. CBS's Adriana Diaz is at the scene.
Officials say they believe the two people who may still be in the building are unlikely to have survived. We spoke with Brandon Colvin Jr., whose father is missing.
Where was your dad's apartment?
It was at the top, right where it all fell down.
The family of an 11-year-old Mississippi boy who called police to help his family and then was shot by a responding officer is now suing the city of Indianola for $5 million. According to family attorney Carlos Moore, Adarian Murray called police regarding a domestic dispute on May 20th.
A brave and courageous young man tried to come to the rescue of his mother. Little did he know that just a few moments later, he will be fighting for his life.
A wildfire on Canada's Atlantic coast has damaged some 200 houses and other structures. It's prompted the evacuation of thousands of people and prompted air quality alerts along the U.S. East Coast. Halifax Deputy Fire Chief David Meldrum.
This fire has not been contained. This fire is not under control. Today it did not spread appreciably, and that is thanks to weather, the work of the firefighters on the ground.
Elizabeth Holmes enters a Texas prison to begin an 11-year sentence for a notorious blood testing hoax. This is CBS News.
Hiring's a lot easier with Indeed. Their powerful platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Continue the conversation online. Find and follow Civic Media on Facebook and on Twitter.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matt-Mayer. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin's DNR is warning that over the next 2 months, we could see the worst spongy moth caterpillar outbreak in a decade. The invasive insect, formerly called the gypsy moth, primarily feeds on oak, birch, crabapple, aspen, and willow trees, but the moths will attack other trees and shrub species as well. Free courses of Pfizer's Paxlovid treatment for COVID-19 will still be offered for at least another few months, even after the Food and Drug Administration granted Pfizer full approval last week to market the medication. The U.S. government has stockpiled millions of doses of Paxlovid. Over 14,000 new COVID-19 cases were reported each week last month, although most cases in the U.S. are no longer reported to health authorities. I'm Jane Natnair. This is Civic Media News.
Hello? I'm a Marine.
No matter how you served.
My buddies from the Army are all gone now. I'm really alone.
No matter what you're going through.
I keep getting calls about the bills, and I'm trying to get a job. I feel so stuck.
We are here for you. If you or a veteran in your life is experiencing thoughts of suicide, dial 988, then press 1 to reach the Veterans Crisis Line.
US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at therickSmithShow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Gotta tell you, I've really enjoyed listening to Republicans lose their minds over the debt ceiling. It's been one of those, we're saddling our children with debt. Aside from them really not knowing what it is they're talking about, other than the scare tactic that they throw out, I do find it interesting that they're the ones who are so concerned about the debt that they want the children to start paying it off early. Which is why on Friday you had the governor of Iowa, Kim Reynolds, who signed a bill into law that's going to make child labor great again. We're going to make exploitation great again. Get those kids on the kill floor. Little hands can get into places and clean stuff. Yeah. And look, double win. They can start paying that debt off a little bit sooner. But here to share some thoughts on the big debt deal. Find out who won, who lost, well, other than we the people. I've asked our good friend Bill Scheer to come talk with us. Bill is the politics editor over at the Washington Monthly. Bill, thanks for taking time for us.
Great to be with you.
So let's start with the winners, the losers. Who won in this?
I think Biden's a big winner. I think Kevin McCarthy's a big winner, to be honest with you. I think Biden needed a win. Needed to show that he can make Washington work. Needed to show he's delivering on his promise to bring bipartisanship back. This is not the first time. He did infrastructure. He did the semiconductor bill. He did Ukraine aid. Did postal service reform. There's lots of bipartisan wins that he's done. And here's one more rabbit he's pulled out of the hat. And look, Kevin McCarthy, people thought that he was going to be under the thumb of the true nut jobs in the Freedom Caucus, the Matt Gaetzes and the Lauren Boeberts. They had this motion to vacate provision in the deal that he got the gavel. One person could call a vote and force him out of the speaker's chair. And Kevin McCarthy has basically done a deal that they don't like. And they do not seem to have the, if not the power to stop, the willingness to use that power to stop him. So they become marginalized in this process. And the worst fears I think we all have, which is a bunch of nihilists are going to blow up the global economy.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
I said, though, the winners in this, the big winner is the Republican Party. What they won here is the normalization of using this as a tool to extract whatever things that they want. This isn't. They've normalized this as part of the budget process, and I don't think it should be. I don't think this is one of those tools that we should be normalizing, saying, "Hey, give us what we want, or we're gonna destroy, you know, our economy, and not just here but globally." I just think that that's the loss for all of us.
Let me say two things about that. One is the debt limit is stupid.
Yeah,
and we should get rid of it. And I think Democrats made a mistake in not doing that 2 years ago. You can't change policy through budget reconciliation. That's the procedure that's used to circumvent the filibuster.
Right.
You can change budgetary provisions. So you could raise the debt limit to a bazillion gajillion dollars, and then it would never be a thing ever again. I think they should have done that. Having said that, I don't agree that we have normalized hostage taking through this particular process. Because what McCarthy did was different than what Ted Cruz did in 2013, when he said, I'm not going to raise the debt ceiling unless you defund Obamacare. Or you go back to Newt Gingrich in 1995, when they said, we're going to pass a budget in the House and the Senate. It's going to cut Medicare. It's going to cut Medicaid. It's going to cut environmental protection. It's going to cut education. And you sign this, Bill Clinton, or forget the debt limit increase. A very specific ransom, or the economy gets it. And what McCarthy did was not as severe as that. What McCarthy said was, look, I want spending cuts. I don't know by how much. I'm not going to put a number out there, but we got to do something. And he was constrained from doing something as extreme as what the Freedom Caucus would have liked. You know, they want a 10-year balanced budget plan,
right,
which, you know, sounds reasonable, but in reality would have been very draconian.
No.
McCarthy never proposed it. Supposedly that was a deal he promised to get the gavel. And he never followed through, never floated it, was not part of the Limit Save Grow Act that passed the House, never was a non-negotiable demand put in front of Bill Clinton. In front of Joe Biden. McCarthy, one of the reasons why it was hard for Biden to just cut off negotiation was McCarthy had a veneer of reasonability. I just want to negotiate. I just want to talk. Even when they passed their bill, he never said it's this bill or nothing.
Right.
There never was that gun to the head move that Ted Cruz and Newt Gingrich tried in the past. So, you know, is it great that the debt limit's still a thing that can be used in negotiations? No, again, I'd rather it not be there. But I think McCarthy is operating in a more reasonable set of parameters than what we had in the past, because when Gingrich tried it and Cruz tried it, it backfired on them because they looked like obnoxious hostage takers.
Now, what is in this? I mean, the one thing that I've seen that's going to take this past the election in 2024, so that's we won't have to deal with this until after, you know, whatever happens then. There are some cuts in place. What do we know so far? And I guess the other question is, what are the chances that this doesn't pass?
I think it's going to pass. I'm not concerned about it not passing. I mean, even the Republican opponents of it admit that it's going to pass. They just want to try to get as big a number as they can to make McCarthy look bad, but I'm not even clear they're going to get that much. But this is basically freezing spending at fiscal year 2022 levels, and then limiting the growth to 1%, which is less than inflation, at least for the next 2 years. I think the cap is a little less firm after that. There's some provision in there, and forgive me for being fuzzy about it because I'm trying to get my arms around myself, that's supposed to be having a backstop if they don't pass appropriations bills, and like a 1% limited growth kicks in automatically. But I think there might be some loopholes in that. I've seen different things argued about it. But in the short run, in the two-year period, you're talking about keeping spending levels below rate of inflation, so an effective cut, which what McCarthy is selling to his people. And it might make Democrats feel that this is not right, that we shouldn't have accepted this under threat of debt default. Biden should have gone 14th Amendment or minted a platinum coin or what have you to avoid that. But keep in mind, this is a different economic moment we're in compared to, say, 2011, when there was the Obama-Boehner debt limit deal. At that 2011, we were still coming out of the Great Recession. Unemployment was still very high at 9%. Obama was worried about undercutting demand. He wanted to stimulate demand. You want to stimulate the economy when it's weak, and create more jobs. And so there was a fear that those spending cuts in 2011 were going to undercut that. Right now, we have record low unemployment.
Right.
We already have the Fed raising rates to try to limit demand. And so to have a little bit of a spending cut, I mean, I'm not saying I love every aspect of it. You don't want to be, you know, hurting the poor necessarily. I'm not saying it's perfect, but in the aggregate, in the macroeconomic picture, what's the one weak spot of Biden's economy is inflation. It's easing, but it's still higher than it was when he came in. And, you know, Biden's job numbers in the economy, they're bad. They're worse than his overall job approval. What's going to fix that? Getting inflation down. If this makes the inflation a little bit better, so long as you don't tip into recession, I mean, you wouldn't want those cuts to be so deep you tip into recession, but I think they might have found the sweet spot here where it's a mild cut. The Fed can do its thing. I mean, they're trying to, you know, ease their rate increases. They're trying to find the sweet spot too. If they can do that soft landing where, you know, GDP is still growing and unemployment's still low and inflation is down, then Biden's golden in 2024.
Right.
And if Democrats have a good 2024, you can revisit all these budget caps in 2025.
No, that's an excellent point. You know, when I woke up and I read about the deal and I'm like, I'm hearing everyone chirping from both sides. My first thought was, well, it must not be bad. If everyone's unhappy, it must be fairly reasonable. Because, you know, if someone's happy and someone's really unhappy, then you've got imbalance. If everybody's unhappy, then maybe it's not horrible.
Well, look, Republicans, they control the House. It's a narrow majority, but they control the House. Yeah, I saw one analysis in the American Prospect, which is a progressive publication, saying, you know, people should not be doing the glass half full thing that I'm doing right now, because sure, it could have been worse, but we should be doing all these other things that would be so much better. And generally speaking, yeah, I agree, but let's face reality. Republicans control the House. If you keep the lights on right now, I'm impressed.
Yeah.
Considering the way things have gone. And like, people thought that Biden would not be able to keep the lights on with the Yahoos in the Republican Party, that we were destined to have some giant economic blow up, that Republicans would try to place the blame at Biden's feet. And if we can not have a global economic meltdown, and Biden can say, look, you know, we did the American Rescue Plan in 2021. We avoided the worst economic cratering because of the pandemic. We kept the economy going. Yeah, there was some inflation early on, but we took care of that in the subsequent years. Republicans and Democrats, they're finding a way to make government work and not have everything fall apart. I did what I promised I was going to do in 2020.
Yeah,
that's as good a re-election message as he's going to get, in my opinion.
No, you're right. But it's so I guess I got to ask you, because this kind of was, you know, it was kind of anticlimactic. It was being built up as this. And look, I did it, too, because I thought the crazies in the Republican Party had a little bit more sway with McCarthy, because and we'll still find out where this goes. But, you know, I was, you know, looking at it going, I think these people really do want to shoot the hostage. It was a little anticlimactic. So, you know, how much of what was being built up was maybe, you know, media hype, horse race thinking, and how much of it was actually potentially real?
Like, I'm forgive me for being a little braggy here, Rick, but I wrote a piece in February for the Washington Monthly saying McCarthy wants a deal. McCarthy doesn't want to blow up the economy. You can see it in his eyes. You can see it in the rhetoric that he's giving. He was talking about trying to do a deal ahead of the deadline. And I was saying, I think you should take this guy at his word.
No, I don't disagree with you on that. I don't think McCarthy wanted to blow up the economy or do the horrible thing. I just gave a little bit more credit to the Scott Perrys of the world and the Gateses and the Greens and the Boberts and the rest of them, the Gohmerts and them. I gave them too much credit, I think.
Well, I think, like, number one, McCarthy recognized that we talk about the debt limit as being this great leverage. It's not great leverage. It's a hand grenade.
Yeah.
It's a hand grenade that you don't want to blow up in your hands. If you can put the other guy's hands, then fine. But you don't want it in your hands. You don't want people to think that you are trying to pull the pin. And so McCarthy recognized that from the outset and was trying to keep the temperature low all the way through. And when he was saying these things in February, when he was not talking about 10-year balanced budget in February, that in, I mean, look, when you asked me in November or December what the Scott Perrys and the Matt Gaetzes were going to do, I'd be like, gee, I don't know, guy. I'm as terrified as you are. These guys seem Looney Tunes. I think they want to shoot the hostage. I think they would enjoy blowing up the economy. And if they can oust the speaker with 5 votes, because Democrats would join them, and that speaker is too spineless to stand up to them, yeah, I'm worried what would happen. You asked that in December, I would have said that. But in February, when McCarthy was saying these more conciliatory things and not pushing 10-year balanced budget, and I did not hear a peep out of the Freedom Caucus at that point. That's when I said to myself, these Freedom Caucus guys, they're chumps. They're bluffers. They're grandstanders. They like to talk a lot of trash, like to make a lot of noise, but they don't have the moxie. They don't have the spine to actually force that speaker vote, to force it to fall and own it. They want to whine and cry and stamp their feet. They don't want to own it themselves. And I think McCarthy recognized that. And basically, he gave them the shoulder the whole time. I mean, even when he gave them some concessions to get the Limit, Save, Grow Act passed last month to get the negotiations going. Literally, as that bill was being passed, McCarthy said, look, I know this is not the final offer. I know that we don't all agree on the particulars here. He basically said to Joe Biden, this is not something that has a hard 218. I mean, if everyone really agreed on that in their own caucus, he could go to Biden and say, look, this is the bill. This is the only thing that can get my caucus together tonight. If I back away from this, then I can't promise I'm getting anything passed. McCarthy gave up that tactic from the get-go. He said, this is just the thing. It's just to get you in the room. But now let's have a real negotiation with all the latitude in the world, because no one has really tied my hands here about what I can actually agree to you on.
No, good call. I mean, you know, we'll see what happens in McCarthy down the road, but I think your assessment of the children not having the moxie to really, you know, touch the button or shoot the hostages, a lot of us thought that they were going to do. Good for the country. I got to be honest. I'm glad that I was wrong. But we'll see where it takes us. But Bill, as always, great stuff. I hope folks will check your stuff out there at the Washington Monthly. We'll get links out on how people can take a look at that. But Bill Scheer, thanks so much for the time.
Always a pleasure. Take care.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. What do you think? Do you think they wanted to? Do you think that this was, you know, a smart McCarthy who just played both sides against the middle? And interested to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as I said, on Friday, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signed the Let's Make Child Labor Great Again bill. Oh, she called them common sense labor provisions that allow young adults to develop their skills in the workforce. And this is, look, I'm not against kids working. I'm not. But when you see stories like this one from the Department of Labor that points out that, you know, one of the chains of Sonics in Nevada, they have six of the Sonic locations that they illegally allowed 14-year-olds to operate fryers and all the stuff that are dangerous in a fast food restaurant. They're not supposed to. The law says workers have to be over 16 or over, can't be under. And when you find out that, you know, you've got this chain that's got 170 violations of child labor law, and you've got, you know, folks in Iowa going, well, you know, just advancing their career options. You know, let those 14-year-olds on the kill floor to clean up the blades and clean up the mess. Yeah, let them get in there. It's good for their spirit, good for their career. I got a problem with that. Look, I want kids. My kid, you know, he's a lifeguard. He works. He does his thing. My oldest daughter, she worked, but under supervision and not in dangerous conditions. You want to teach work ethic. You want kids to understand the value of a dollar and what it takes to earn it. You, most certainly, as parents, we want that stuff. But we don't want them to be put in situations of peril. And now, look, here's what I do understand. And I've got a bunch of my friends going, well, you're wrong, Rick. You know, we should let, you know, parents decide. No, I'm not in love with this let parents decide argument. Because when you get further down the economic ladder, parents get a lot more desperate and are willing to, and out of necessity sometimes, put kids in peril just so that they can survive. And I think that is not something we should be allowing. Because look, and I said this from the start, when Iowa was moving on this child labor bill, these are not going to be my kids. These are not going to be, you know, middle class America. That's not who this is. These are going to be immigrant kids. These are going to be poor working class kids. These are going to be the desperate of our society. We're going to be the ones getting screwed into this. So for me, I think we need to have sane, rational protections in place. And I think these Republicans right now across this country and state houses across the country are going too far. But again, remember, they're the ones telling us we've got to protect the children. They're grooming the children to be accepting of others. But we want to exploit them to work. Yeah, you figure it out because I'm struggling with it. I want to quick get to an email from Barbara. She said, Rick, do you support Chick-fil-A? No, I don't. The reason I brought it up, Barbara, simple. I find it interesting that the chicken sandwich of the radical right is now being attacked because they're not anti-gay enough. I have never gone to Chick-fil-A. I will probably never will. It's not something that I have done simply because of their stance and their position and treatment of people. There are other options. As a consumer, I have the ability to do that. What I don't do is I don't go to Chick-fil-A and harass the workers and the customers there. I don't agree with the goals of the franchise, although I do agree with them being off on Sundays. Live your values. I'm in favor of that. But you don't see me in there harassing and intimidating their customers and their workers like you do on the right. I just don't go in there. I choose not to be a customer. And that's my right as a consumer. There are other places. What the radical right is doing is much more dangerous and much more destructive. And, you know, we hear the right complain about, the left, they boycott things. Yeah, they boycott things by not going there. Which my right-leaning friends have shown me. Violence works. Intimidation of violence works. Because this is what they're really doing. They're showing up, getting in people's faces, and threatening and intimidating. And it's so far worked. This is where we need laws, and this is where the sane and rational among us need to step forward and stand up and speak out. So, Barbara, to answer your question, nope, don't. But I do find it interesting that even Chick-fil-A is not hateful enough for the radical right. And it's only going to get worse. Thanks so much for your email. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1937. That was the day that came to be known as the Republic Steel Massacre, or the Memorial Day Massacre in Chicago, Illinois. Workers had gathered to rally for a union at the Republic Steel plant. The crowd included men, women, and children, and began with a festive holiday atmosphere. But soon the festivity gave way to horror as police opened fire, shooting indiscriminately into the crowd of workers. 10 workers were slain. Many others were injured. The violence was caught by a film camera, which captured chilling scenes of policemen beating workers with clubs as they tried to flee the violence. One of those workers was a woman by the name of Guadalupe Marshall. Lupe had come to the United States from Mexico in 1917. At the time of the strike, she was working for the famed Chicago Hull House, researching the conditions of Mexican workers in the city. During the massacre, she was wounded in the head. She was then shoved into a patrol wagon, where she tried to help other wounded people. One of the wounded died in her arms. Later, she testified before the U.S. Senate Committee of Education and Labor about what she saw that day. She said, quote, "As we were walking along to the patrol wagon, I noticed men lying all over the field. Some of them were motionless, some were groaning, but nearly all of those that were lying down had their heads covered with blood and their clothing was stained with blood." The Senate committee helped expose what happened that bloody day in Chicago. The local newspaper blamed the violence on the workers, and the film of the event was suppressed by the city.
Republic's bloody ground, the 30th of May. Oh, brothers, lift your voices high for them that died that day. The men who make our country steel, the toilers in the mill, they set in union.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
If poobahs of the National Democratic Party wonder why working class families, which once formed the party's solid base of political support, have gone astray, they might ponder the awful message they're sending by constantly smooching Senator Joe Manchin's tail. The multimillionaire West Virginia coal baron and anti-democratic Democrat is demanding that a massively polluting pipeline named Mountain Valley be rammed through rivers, watersheds, national parks, and down the throats of the people of West Virginia, Virginia, and North Carolina. Why? Money. The senator's fossil fuel funders, who own the project, want the federal government to mandate construction of their corporate boondoggle. For a decade, gutsy grassroots groups have rebelled and defeated these Wall Street profiteers, and the people of this Appalachian region are still adamantly opposed. But here comes Biden to rescue Manchin and his fossil fuelers with a dirty backroom deal overruling the will of the people, proclaiming that he wants to advance America's conversion from fossil fuels to renewable energy. Biden is pushing a bill to make it easier and faster to get federal approval for new energy projects. Fine. But his bill specifically greases the skids for more fossil fuel projects. And guess which one is the first in line for quick approval? Yes, Brother Joe Manchin's Mountain Valley Pipeline. Pumping fracked gas through 3 states would produce a mess of leaks and spills. But the project would also emit some 40 million metric tons of planet-warming gas a year, equivalent to the annual pollution of 10 coal plants. As the Natural Resources Defense Council puts it, we won't build the clean energy economy of the future by doubling down on the dirty fuels of the past. This is Jim Hightower saying, for information and action on this raw deal, connect with Appalachian Mountain Advocates, appvoices.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So this was something that grabbed my attention earlier today. Remember Tara Reid? She's the one who accused then-Senator Joe Biden of a sexual assault And look, you know, I listened to the whole thing. I had people, you know, explain to me, you know, why like she was part of the Me Too and she should be believed. And I got to be honest, I didn't buy the story. Didn't buy it. You know, it didn't add up the way that it was explained. Well, interestingly enough, she has, I guess she's moved to Russia. Maybe she's hooking up with this Maria Butina. Remember her? She had the gun group from Russia that it was funneling a bunch of NRA money around. There was a lot of coziness going on there. Well, evidently the both of them are back in Russia. Kind of makes you think a little bit. Kind of makes you wonder. I know it's all a hoax. It's all a hoax. The Russian thing. The Russians are as pure as driven snow. Yeah. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on maybe this and the rest of the big news of the day. I've asked our good friend, former Ohio Congressman and political analyst Bob Ney, to share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thank you, Rick.
So, what do you think of this? This Tara Reid off? I guess moving to Mexico. To Russia. Does this kind of throw any signals for you?
Well, a couple of things I thought. You know, she made the allegations about 3 years ago, I believe it was, and back in 1993 she was assaulted, and there was nobody that she had. I mean, and you know, anything can happen, and I know we all have a system and it looks at things, but on her case, there was nothing where she had went to somebody. I mean, in cases like that, they may wait, but they usually tell somebody. You know, yeah. There's a whole, because it's so traumatic for them, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what I thought was interesting is that in December, the Russian diplomats tried to bring her for a meeting on weapons diversion. Now, why? What does she have as an expertise on weapons diversion? She has no expertise on that topic. Now, she didn't speak at the UN meeting. They tried this at the UN, the Russians. But she did interview Russia's deputy permanent representative of the United Nations as a, quote, journalist she was on her own YouTube channel. Okay, you know how that runs, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I just wanted to point that out. There's been this back and forth where, you know, she tried to go to the UN for weapons diversion, and, of course, she wanted to be at the UN saying, here I am. I was attacked by, you know, Joe Biden. And then finally she goes to Russia. So I think this has been in the works for a while. Obviously, because of the Ukraine situation, they want her over there for propaganda purposes. No question about it.
So you think that's what they're going to march?
Dealing with them, they tried to get her to the UN in December. That didn't work, so they, you know, have granted her the ability to go over there. Of course, her living will be paid for, and, you know, things like that.
Look, everyone needs food and rent money. I'm guessing that's part of this.
Yeah, but I'm not going to do it in Russia or Afghanistan.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things where, you know, how much are you willing to allow yourself to be used, and are you really? I gotta tell you, even if I agreed with Putin, I'm not trusting that guy to. No, that ain't happening.
Well, right. Also, the other thing too, and this is, you know, this is so weird. You know, she was fearing for her life. No,
where?
If you're, you know, if you've made this accusation, it's highly unlikely that the president of the United States would sick his assassins on you. Okay. So I don't know why she would be fearing. Nobody paid attention to her anyway.
Yeah, no,
so,
I forgot her name until I saw this story.
Right, right, exactly.
You know, I
thought it was Tara Reid, the actress, at first.
Yeah, no, I remember, you know, her. I watched an interview with her as she was explaining what had happened. And, you know, it just didn't sound plausible. It's one of those things where you go, you know, look, I believe women when they say they've been assaulted. And but, you know, when you start saying that, you know, it was in a public hallway, and it just didn't sound like it didn't sound plausible. You know, look, if you say, right, hey, push me into a broom closet. OK, I told somebody, like you said at the time, a friend, a relative, someone who would be willing to come forward. But there was none of that.
Right. Now, remember, too. And this got so little attention, but this is why I doubt her. Again, I'm always cautious. Even Santos has his day in court, right?
Right.
I'm cautious about that kind of thing. But there's also plausible deniability on certain things. And here's something that you don't see in media, and I don't know why you don't, but there is a, I don't know if you've ever heard of Harriet Rye, but she is a 79-year-old author and a psychologist, right? And Rye and her husband knew Reed, and they knew her as Tara McCabe. She had rented yacht on their place on their California property, and she took care of their horses and things, etc. Now, this was in 2017, wasn't that long ago, all right? And then she asked for financial help, and on and on and on. Money was problematic for her, you know. And here's the other thing. She had spoken so highly of Biden to them, all right? So there is a background on her, but it's all positive.
Yeah.
And then she moved on. She burnt this couple, is what she did, and, you know, she moved on. So if you look at this and you look at some of her history and her other names, Tara McCabe, she also, by the way, went by Alexandra McCabe, and she also integrated herself with other people, took advantage of them, extracted money from them, skipped rent payments, and walked out on other bills. She's been doing this. Now, again, you're not going to see what I just said in many articles, but it's a fact. Everything I just said is factual.
Yeah, no, I just looked it up, and you're right. In fact, you know, the one thing, you know, the woman said that she was deceitful and manipulative and a user.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
And she did it with multiple people, different names, et cetera. But the point is, too, she never at any point in time with those people... never came to light where she said, oh, by the way, I was assaulted by Senator Biden, who's now the president. You know,
running, no, and look, you know, for me, president. The other part of this is the right never really embraced her.
No.
I mean, there was some, you know, spatterings here or there. But, you know, if she didn't have all of this in the past, man, she would be the poster child, the attack dog in all of the right wing media.
Right.
And
well,
they
even
really
the right
haven't touched her.
Even the right knew there was some change short of a quarter, okay? Even the right knew that.
And that's
a broken clock works, what do they say, twice a day. So.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's one of those things where, you know, if they're willing to pass on it, it's got to be bad. So I am not surprising. I want to get all your right. thoughts on this because this Vivek Ramaswamy guy running for president has some aides who evidently were paid by the LIV Golf Tournament folks, the Saudis. It seems interesting to me that these folks have come forth, you know, now saying, hey, we've got to register as foreign agents because, hey, we took the Saudi money, because it's being reported that potentially some subpoena action coming down from Jack Smith to the Trump Organization for, you know, information on this LIV Golf and the Saudi real estate deals that are going on. Seems like interesting timing to me. Or is it just me putting things together that maybe aren't linked?
No, I think it is interesting timing. He fired the consultants who worked simultaneously for LIV Golf. And, you know, he fired one of the firm's consultants that were on his presidential campaign, and that was after it was revealed the firm had also at the same time been doing public relations for a majority Saudi-backed entity, you know, as they said in the news clips. And it was Gitcho Goodwin. The firm was led by a longtime operative, I guess, Gail Gitcho. I've never heard of Gail Gitcho. And Henry Goodwin, and they were registered, by the way, retroactively, May 25th, as foreign agents, retroactively. So, you know, they're not going to get charged, but obviously they didn't do things, you know, the right way. And then he hired them, and he's now, you know, fired them. So I don't think he hired them knowing, you know, they were doing certain things. But look, the Saudis have 100 ways to, you know, spread their influence and wealth.
Yeah.
And that's what they do. They're everywhere, and the Saudis have obviously hired this firm that kind of serves as the front, you know, front people for it.
No, what's amazing to me, Bob, and look, you spent years in Washington, so I mean,
I worked in Saudi Arabia.
What's that?
And I worked in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, yeah, that's right. But, you know, what I'm saying is, you worked in Washington. You know that the money flows in from all over the world. And we're one of the few mm-hmm. countries in the world that allows foreign governments to lobby our Congress and lobby our representatives. Mm-hmm. You know, so I look at the Saudi money that comes in, the Chinese money that comes in, even the Russian money that was, so influential for years. And I go, at some point, do we not have to look at this and figure out how to block this stuff from getting into our political system? Or is it just too pervasive and impossible to do?
Well, a point I will make, and I made this at the time, and the late Senator McCain was furious with me. But in conversations I had with, his staff, and when he had the campaign finance bill in my committee, McCain-Feingold, and I warned at that time, you can go ahead and deal with soft money, But at the time I said, let's do full transparency. House administration, Rick, also oversaw the Federal Elections Commission. So it would be easy to, at that time, to do full transparency, Federal Elections Commission, the FEC, money coming in, but also with any of these PACs or accounts or business accounts. And that's because all these things created, whether it's Soros or the Koch brothers or Karl Rove or whoever, a lot of these accounts are shadow money. You don't know who's doing what. And, of course, they use the unions and the corporations saying, oh, that terrible union soft money or that corporation soft money, which we can debate. But the whole issue of dark money was left dark. And I think this all ought to be cleaned up. So that, if people are using this money and it somehow gets in the political system. Now, here's what the lobbyists will say, this Gitch Go Goodwin. And what they say is, well, sure, people like the Saudis seek out influential, lobby types. Well, the point, I guess, is those influential lobby types are mingled in politics on Capitol Hill, and they're taking Saudi money, Russian money, Chinese money, whatever money. And so they are connected. And there's a whole wink and nod there. And so I don't think these foreign countries ought to be able to hide behind lobbyists, quote, who are American, whose job is to influence the American political system.
Yeah, because I look at this LIV golf thing, and from the beginning, my mind was, this just seems like a honeypot. I mean, just a huge amount of money for people to get their hands in. Yeah, they got the golf tournament going on, but it seemed like an interesting laundering vehicle to be able to get all these people. Trump was involved in it. I guess Kushner was involved in it. A lot of people have been involved in it. It just seemed
Ron
like a way
DeSantis.
Yeah, I mean, it just seemed like a way to pay a lot of people off.
DeSantis was involved. Look, LIV's connections to these candidates, it goes beyond Trump. And Ramaswamy, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Trump knows. Trump's organization knew. Ramaswamy, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He's new in the system. He may not have known. But, Trump knew. And then what they did is this LIV, this Gitch Go Goodwin, here, let's just put this together for one second if I could. Gitch Go Goodwin was contracted to work for LIV, all right? And that was through something called a 50-state LLC and a public affairs P2 group, two subsidies of a consulting conglomerate called a GP3 Partners, if I've confused you yet, which has Phil Cox, Republican. Cox was a top advisor to the Super PAC, supporting who? Ron DeSantis. I mean, I know that must sound confusing to your listeners, but just think about that. Four layers till it got to DeSantis.
No, I mean, that's the point. That's how you launder money, Bob.
It is. There's four layers of laundering, literally. I just quoted four layers of laundering.
And along the way, there are a bunch of hands in that pot. So now you've got all of these people who are corrupted all along the way. And look, they're all now in on it. So you've corrupted the whole system. It's the same thing that, going back to that Maria Butina, it's the same kind of thing that the Russians did with her and the NRA.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Or do you see it differently? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
No, I'm the one way back when who said in the House Administration Committee, and I had, I had a couple people supporting me, Democrat and a Republican on the committee, but I said way back when Let's know every dime and every person. It's like pork. I'm okay with pork. Put our names on it.
Yeah.
You know, put our names on it. Attach little subtitles to the bills. But it's the same thing with this money. And I've said it years ago. It all ought to be shown. Those PACs, the PG2, the PG3 that was under the conglomerates, you know, all of that should have been immediately reported that it was LIV money,
yeah.
Saudi money. It wasn't.
How bad?
So I'm all for it.
Let me ask you this. How bad really is it?
Oh, I think it's pervasive. I look at certain things and I see super PACs do certain things, and you wonder how they're being steered. Who's really putting the money into it? I mean, people could, you know, for whatever influence, could put tons of money in there, and they can do it through a P2, a PG conglomerate, just like I mentioned, and we will never know. We won't know who they are, what they're doing, what they're behind. And here's my idea. If we want to have fair game about this, you know, put it all out in the open sunshine, and then, you know, people can make judgments. The press, of course, would go after it then. But what I just went through right now, how much has the media or anybody on Capitol Hill said, wow, I didn't know there was all this legal laundering money, you know, entities out there. I mean, it just gets dismissed. I think it's a big deal. I think it hurts our democracy. And Rick, it influences in ways you and I will never be able to find out if we had, you know, five investigators hired.
No, I mean, and that's the thing that gets me. I mean, you look at the money that's being thrown around, and you know, I remember years ago when you know, a number of left-leaning you know, radio and TV hosts went to RT, and you know, the Russian money that was coming in to you know, to kind of, you know, move and I would argue corrupt the message as a whole. There's just something wrong about this and something that needs to be done about it. And I was like, no, people were like, no, it's not a big deal. I'm like, I don't know. I feel uncomfortable with it.
I think it is a big deal. And that's why when McCain had his bill, you know, he was going to, quote, clean the system up, which more money went into the system than ever before after the bill passed. It just moved. That's the point. It just simply moved. And you will hear American politicians, And I was one of them at the time when we were passing these bills, you can't put foreign money in campaigns. You know, you will hear American politicians say, you know, we banned foreign money in campaigns. You don't ban it when you have three entities, like I discussed, funded by Saudis, that goes into the hands of people who are running presidential campaigns.
Yeah, I mean,
we have not stop the influence.
No, it's crazy. In fact, you know, I was just, you know, you brought up DeSantis and you brought up this dark money, and you know, there's a super PAC right now. In fact, I think it was CBS that reported this, that a super PAC backed by DeSantis and the run for president, I guess they've raised almost $500,000, and somehow it's going to be transferred directly into his campaign account in the coming days. And I'm like, how is that possible?
Right. And also there's a Chinese expert. His name is Rush. I think it's pronounced Doshi, and D-O-S-H-I, I believe. He's done a lot of work, and he shows how the Chinese have funded politically friendly research institutions. Right. They've got language media centers. You know, and these aren't necessarily, and some of them are legit, don't get me wrong, but this is where the government, the feds, need to look into this, because some of them are simply political tools. That's what they are. These institutes come out with policy drafts, then they filter out through people, they filter out through advocacy groups that are set up, that are, quote, American, but all the information is coming from the Chinese. And he's uncovered a lot of this. They're out there, too. That we just don't hear about the Chinese as much because of Trump and the whole Russian thing and Paul Manafort. The Chinese are there, too.
I think the Chinese are actually worse because they're deep in and a lot more quiet about it. But the Russian thing, not a hoax. I'm sorry, I'm not buying it.
No, and when I was in China for meetings one time, I brought my own translator from the American Army, and I brought my own translator, and I said, "What are they saying?" And at the table at the college, they were talking about me. Now, this is back in 1996, that I had used the word China should be contained. And I got back and talked to my press secretary. This is pre-internet days, really. And we were like, where did I say that? We looked through articles. We used to have the paper clips. Do you know where the article was? It was in the Noble County Journal Leader, a twice-monthly newspaper in Noble County, Ohio, 10,000 people, in 1995. The Chinese knew that, pre-internet days.
Yeah, they
that's
do their
how much. Yeah, that's how much they target. I was in shock. How would they know that, you know? And just think today of what they can do in these institutes. So I think it's a real problem. I would love to see somebody take this on in the Congress.
No, the money is the problem. Our greed is our undoing. That's the sad reality. But, Bob, as always, I appreciate the time and the insight. Good stuff.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, our good friend Bob Ney. Seriously, I mean, something has to be done on just how pervasive and how ingrained the foreign money into these lobby groups really are. It's scary stuff. Quick break. Right back. Think Tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute. So Donald Trump has pledged that if he is elected, he's going to end birthright citizenship. Oh, that's right. Yeah, never mind that Constitution thing. Executive order. You're going to use executive order. Edict from the on high to end birthright citizenship, which means that if you come here and you have a child here, this is in most countries around the world. If you have a child there and they're born on that soil, you are a citizen of that country. They want to do away with that. And look, there's been talk of this for years. Not going to happen. Good luck on that. We should be talking about an actual immigration policy, but that's too hard to do. What we're going to do is we're going to talk about building walls. And the Trump folks, back to the wall thing. Now, interesting, because I think of Trump and his love affair with Kim Jong-un. Un, during the pandemic, evidently built a massive border wall, hundreds of miles of border wall with the northern part of the country, because evidently that's how information gets in. That's how people get out. Those are trade opportunities. Things. Understand the difference here. Un. And I got to wonder, when this changes here, too. Un doesn't want people to get out. The idea is build the big wall so nobody can get out. Trump and them are saying, well, we don't want anybody to get in. And I would argue at some point, does it not become nobody gets out of here? Especially in MAGA world, where if you found out that evidently people were getting Trump bucks. Have you heard of this? Someone had set up a cash system with Trump's name, and idiots were buying Trump bucks, trying to figure out how to cash them in, only to find out that they're worthless pieces of paper. But they got Trump bucks, and my mind goes to that old saying, a fool and his money soon parted. Here it is, the MAGA crowd with their Trump bucks. Can you imagine? There was an AI-generated video of Trump saying, let's make America wealthy again. Come get our Trump bucks. I'm sorry. I find it hysterical. And to be honest, if I'm the enforcement folks, I am not. There's part of me that goes, don't even bother going after him. Look, I mean, you see the scammers all the time. Hey, go get eBay Motors gift cards and send them to us. If you're dumb enough to fall for that, we should go after somebody. But this, to think that Trump's going to start his own currency and you're going to buy in? Wow, and I thought crypto was bad. I want to hear your...
You're listening to The Shah. WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.